go behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to Car Stuff. I'm Scott Benjamin.
And I am Ben Bolin.
Ben, I got an idea for you here today that we're going to talk about kind of an unusual form of artwork.
All right. That sounds like a good idea.
I was thinking about hubcap art. And this is kind of an unusual set of circumstances that led to me thinking about this. Because I came to you not long ago and said, hey, I got a great idea. Let's talk about this. And there's actually a form of art called hubcap art. But the strange thing is this occurred to me while I was sitting at a California Pizza Kitchen.
Wait, before we go any further, this is a true story. You did come up to me, and we were kicking around ideas, but you came up and out of the blue, seemingly, said, we got to cover hubcap art.
Yeah.
And this is the first time I've heard this story.
Oh, yeah. I didn't tell you why, I guess. I was having dinner at California Pizza Kitchen.
CPK, for those in the know.
That's right, yeah. And, you know, I was sitting there in the booth, and I was looking around, and they have on the wall all those pizza boxes that local artists have painted.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them are very cool, but it's all the exact same box. It's just interpreted many different ways. You know, how they decorate them, if they cut them, if they, you know, there's several openings in them, the colors they use, the backgrounds they use, whatever. But it's all from the same thing, the same basic source, the pizza box. And I thought, well, that kind of looks like something that I've seen in the past at a local car dealership. There was a really crude form of hubcap art that I saw it's kind of a specialty car shop, I guess.
Okay.
And I don't know what the story was with it, what the deal was with it, that you know, somebody had painted hubcaps, and I got to tell you, Ben, the example that I'm talking about was very poorly done. And I'm not going to tell you where it was or who did it or whatever, but I didn't like it. I thought it looked pretty bad. And I think it was done on, you know, like newer plastic hubcaps, you know, something like a simple economy car from today.
Which, as we will discuss later, does make a difference.
It does make a difference. That's right. So, it sparked my memory into this thing that hubcap art. So I kind of looked it up online, and lo and behold, there's this enormous universe of hubcap art going on out there that I had no idea.
Of us had any idea.
No, and it's more to it than just painting as well.
Right. Now we should do just a quick intro on this before we proceed. And by way of intro, let's just start where you started, with the fact that there's a lot more to this than you might think when you first hear the phrase.
Mm-hmm.
Because when we talk about hubcap art, we're not necessarily talking about conventional customization or modification, spinning tires or things on the rims, mm-hmm. you know. What we're talking about are hubcaps that are generally taken away from a vehicle and somehow used as either a canvas or a medium.
Mm-hmm.
And there are loads of ways to do this.
It's a good way to put it. Yeah, there's a couple of different ways to do it. I've actually got three here there's painting that we mentioned already. That's probably the first one, right?
Yep.
That's kind of simple. You paint the hubcap, you put anything on it you want. It could be, some organic design. It could
sure.
be a landscape. It could be anything you want. Right?
Or like me and Scott playing awesome guitar solos. We're just brainstorming.
Yeah, that's right. It could be that, right. And, some people have gone so far as to paint, like, reflections of themselves pulling that hubcap off of a vehicle, which is kind of cool.
Pretty cool.
You could recreate old masters paintings, whatever you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Sky, blue sky, mm-hmm. wide open. The next thing, and this is kind of cool, I think, maybe the coolest part of this, sculpture.
I'm tempted to agree with you.
Yeah, I think so. Just when you look at these, I mean, and it's hard to say which is cooler, because there's dramatic examples of each one. But,
right.
And I've seen some great painted hubcaps. But sculpture, this is just so cool. And we get to, talking about some of the artists that do this, which we promise we will later.
Sure thing.
But sculpture where they weld or glue or somehow fasten. They can screw these things together.
Ooh.
They can somehow affix them together to make something bigger than what the hubcap is initially.
And this is really neat for fans of folk art, especially if you are one of the people who enjoys seeing, for instance, animals that are made of scrap metal, mm-hmm. and things of that nature. This is for you guys, because the hubcap here really is more of a medium than it is a canvas.
Yeah.
And it's It's used to shape out, you know, maybe a person or an animal. I'm just saying animal often because those are the examples I've seen.
Well,
most
you had a friend who did this, right?
Yes, I have an acquaintance who will remain nameless. I don't know if he wants all the attention. Pretty private guy, but he used scrap metal from, say, your local salvage or your pull-apart, and he was also a welder. So he would weld these things in his backyard and never really sold them, never really talked about it, because, again, this is a very chill dude. Mm-hmm. And I was in his backyard one day, and I was blown away. I mean, it looks as though it's some sort of outdoor exhibit.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, sometimes artists are that way.
That's really cool. I like stuff like that. It's found art, really, because you're taking pieces that are normally going to be end up in the landfill, just a junkyard piece, and creating something, well, beautiful out of it, really, or something appealing in some way to someone. And, man, that's really cool. What welding is such a cool skill to have, isn't
welding
it?
Welding is a super cool skill. I mean, if only because welding helmets are so awesome. You know what
yeah.
I mean? With the photoreactive face shield.
Yeah, those are cool.
That stuff is so cool.
Very dangerous in some ways, but you know what? We talk about that often. That's something I would love to learn to do.
Maybe we should. Maybe that should be a resolution.
I've got something I have to admit just quickly. Last weekend, I watched a 45-minute online video about welding and just kind of an intro, like maybe how to start doing it. And I've been pondering it, but I don't know if it'll go anywhere or not.
Yeah.
But it's a great skill to have. It would be really cool.
We'd like to hear from others.
What's the third one? The third one is, and this is less common, I think, in many cases, stacking or arranging hubcaps in a certain fashion
to create
something, like maybe a tree or making a small building or something. Mm. This takes a lot of hubcaps, I guess.
Yeah, I saw a couple that were almost like tiered. Size hubcaps to make almost a bowl or some kind of conical thing.
And they still look cool.
Yeah.
It's just it's far less common than it are the painting and sculpture methods, I guess.
Absolutely.
So
why would someone do this?
That's a good question, I guess. Well, the thing is, I think that it's because it's a readily available medium.
Yes.
So you're able to find these things. I don't know how many times I've driven down the road and seen a hubcap lane in someone's, in someone's yard that had bounced off, you know, going over. We have a lot of speed bumps down here.
Yes.
And if your hubcaps aren't properly affixed, you're sure to lose them. I mean, at some point during the year.
Right.
You want to make sure they're on properly. But, a pothole or, just a particularly dangerous curve or something,
Or ubiquitous steel plate collection.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but the thing is, hubcaps are really everywhere. If you're looking around for them, you'll see them tacked to trees or, people have... it's very thoughtful, I guess. They want, to return it to the rightful owner. They just tack it up where they found it.
Yeah.
But you see that happening all over the place. So I think that this is a medium that, it's readily available.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that has to be appealing for the artists in this. What the three R's, reuse,
recycle, remix,
reload or something. Reload. I've got it here somewhere. We'll dig it up later. But
I was about to just start saying R words. Reboot.
Rearrange.
yes, so that's a good point. First off, hubcaps are definitely not hard to find.
No. Go ahead.
Oh, and also there's a great argument there for sustainability, as we talked about, the three R's.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go ahead and throw in Ben's once every podcast mention of being thrifty.
Mm-hmm.
And here it is, Scott. You can get them for a very reasonable price.
If you buy them.
If you buy them,
and
sometimes you can just find them.
Well, oftentimes you can, but you can get them very reasonable. The other thing that we need to point out here, Ben.
Oh yes,
this is really important.
Disclaimer.
Yeah. Please do not steal hubcaps to do this. It's been pointed out in every article that I've read about this, because we did a decent amount of show prep on this, and every artist that we looked into, that was one point that was clear, is that. These are something they find or they locate, on wrecked vehicles, junkyard vehicles. They're given to them. Oftentimes they won't pay for them because they're not charged for them. They say, just take that. I don't need that. It's going to be landfill junk anyways.
Sure.
But they do not steal hubcaps with one exception, which I will tell you about later because, there's an odd story that, Yeah, someone got into some bad territory with this.
So that's our disclaimer, folks. First commandment of hubcap art, thou shalt not steal.
Yeah.
Were there any other reasons you wanted to say about why people approach this medium?
No, you know, I think we should just kind of move on to, you know, some of the uses for them that, you know, people have found.
Okay.
Because a lot of people won't really think about this, but there's several other uses for hubcaps.
Yeah, you mentioned this off air, but you didn't say them. You got a list here?
Yeah, it's a little crazy. I mean, just a few different things, but people kind of, you can cut them up and use them as jewelry. You can use them as like a dog dish if you clean them out properly.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of people, now, this is after you've cleaned them and prepped them, you know, like a lot of metal etching and sanding and maybe even priming a painting.
Okay.
People use them as lampshades, clock faces. They bend them and make them into purses with latches.
Oh, that's neat.
Candy dishes.
Makes sense.
And it's kind of eccentric, I guess, if you came over to someone's house and they've got a candy dish made out of, you know, like an old Cadillac hubcap or something.
I've seen hubcap ashtrays,
mm-hmm.
and just purely based on speculation, I imagine that if you were a competent Frisbee enthusiast, you could do it, but I wouldn't just go out there just because you like the idea.
You know what? Might be able to throw it. I think catching it would be the hard part.
It's a little bit more of a discus, isn't
it? You might need those welding gloves just to play catch, right? All right. So anyways, there's a lot of other use. Oh, one other quick thing that I heard. Wet cement or stucco on walls. People have applied hubcaps into wet cement on walls and use the hubcaps as kind of a design element of that
I've
wall,
seen that.
Which is kind of cool. I've seen locally someone's used like a bunch of bowling balls and things like that, but I've never seen anybody use hubcaps.
I think there are some folks out west who have done some of the, I think it's a sustainable living thing, you know, reclaiming things, using tires as a building material as well as hubcaps.
Oh, and bottles and things like that. We've
yeah,
seen it.
Yeah.
Okay, I've seen a lot of glass bottles and stucco. By the way, the three R's.
Oh, you got them?
Yeah. Reduce, reuse, recycle.
Reduce. That's the one.
Yeah. We didn't hit reduce. But anyways, reduce, reuse, recycle. So, okay, there's a couple of artists that I think we need to talk about when we talk about hubcap art, because there's a few that will come up immediately in any search. The first one, Ben, you want to hit us with this?
Well, the first one I have is Ken Marquis, the founder of a little thing called the Landfill Art Project. And, yeah, I am being sarcastic when I call it a little thing.
Yeah, it's big.
It's big. It's big. It's a global global thing. So three phases. So Ken Marquis has founded this project with the aim of making 1,041, exactly 1,041 hubcap art pieces.
Okay, hold on. That's a strange number.
It is. You and I have been speculating a little bit, I think, about how he got this number.
Yeah.
And here's how his story goes. So he is looking through some landfill. Oh, excuse me. He's at a car show, and he's looking around at this car show, and he stumbles on 41 rusted hubcaps. And he kind of had that California Pizza Kitchen moment.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if he calls it that.
Probably not.
But he saw this hubcap, and he thought, you know what? I can do something with this.
Yeah,
this
sure.
does not have to be garbage.
He's an artist.
He is an artist. So he bought them for a little bit over $80, and then he started working on them, and the idea caught fire. So he got 1,000 just a few weeks later, like maybe a month later.
Really? Okay, so he's got this initial 41. He wants to have 1,000 other works of art completed by other artists, right?
Yes.
So the other 1,000 that he's not going to attempt to complete all 1,000 himself. He's already done the initial 41, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so he's going to have an additional 1,000 completed by other artists, which is actually phase two of the project, right?
Right.
Phase one was the initial 41.
Yes.
Phase two is the 1,000. Phase three is publish a book with all 1,041 depictions within that book. So,
which we're totally going
to
buy.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, maybe just something to have around the office here, because if you go to his website, landfillart.org, it's landfillart.org, you can look at all of the pieces that he has assembled so far. And, man, there's quite a mix here, Ben. You were showing me one earlier that looks like a
banjo.
Oh, a banjo. That's right. Yeah. Someone made a banjo out of one. I see stuff here that looks like, well, of course, there's paintings, and there's some that look like art cars with everything, you know, adhered to them. Mm-hmm. But there's some with, like, little sculptures on the side, like a dog's head that's biting the hubcap. There's a lot of paintings. People have cut them up to look like spaceships.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they're cut up in ways that so much so that they don't even really appear like a hubcap anymore. It looks like just a little sculpture of a spaceship, but
the
basis of it is a hubcap. And there's, again, there's page after page after page of these things, and they're really interesting. They're cool to look at.
In a 2011 interview, he stated some of the premises that he's setting for this project, mm-hmm. and you know about this 80-20 ratio.
Yeah, right? Yeah. He's got an 80-20 ratio that he feels that this project needs to adhere to.
Mm-hmm. And that's going to be 80% of the artists working on this are supposed to be professional artists. 20% are supposed to be non-traditional artists. Now, these could be mentally or physically challenged artists. These could be people who are politically oppressed or even prisoners. And this, I think, is a very interesting move. And what I like about this sort of art based on one medium is that it sort of gives more creative space to the artist because they're all starting from the same place. Oh, and the point we meant to make earlier about the plastic modern hubcap that you saw.
Yeah.
The majority of these hubcaps are from the 30s to the 1980s.
Yeah, you know, there's a good reason for that too, because that was when they were, a lot of them were made from metal that were chrome capped. So they have a lot of style to them. They're a thicker metal in most cases, better suited to the type of you know, bending and processing that these artists are going to put these things through. Now we mentioned the other 80%, which are going to be professional artists, right?
Right.
Those professional artists. Now he's got a goal for that 80% as well. So it's kind of subdivided again. From that 80% of artists, he wants. He's going to have one professional artist from each of Pennsylvania's 67 counties and at least one from each of the 50 United States.
Oh, cool.
So and he's also going to have some international artists too, but he did want to have every one of the states represented and every one of Pennsylvania's counties mm-hmm. represented. So he's got plans for this thing, and he's got a really good well laid out plan. And I don't know if it's complete yet or not. I would think that it's got to be because I think he was scheduled to be done sometime in 2012.
Phase two,
yeah. And so the book would be coming soon. But I know that looking at the images here, there's an awful lot of images. I didn't count to see if they're 1,041. But I'll tell you, it seems like they're close.
Yeah, and I am really looking forward to the final phase of this, which will be a traveling collection. That exhibit could be really cool.
Oh, that would be cool. And I could see something, you know, I could see, you know, the Atlanta Art Museum hosting something like that. Or, you know, any mm-hmm. of the major cities hosting something like that. I think that would be an interesting exhibit to go to.
Yeah, and let's see. So we've got our due diligence paid to the Landfill Art Project.
Yeah.
Please check out the website. This guy is doing some great work along with loads of other artists, but mm-hmm. he is not the only hubcap artist.
Oh, no. There's many, many of them out there, but one that I feel we need to mention in this podcast for sure
mm-hmm.
is, how do you pronounce his name, Ben? You're probably better at this.
Ptolemy, maybe? Oh, gosh,
Ptolemy?
Oh, no, we're both fired.
Anyways, Ptolemy Erlington, Elrington.
Mm-hmm.
That's my best shot at it, Ben, okay?
Okay.
He's a British sculptor.
Yes.
And, this stuff is so cool. He had the idea, this is years ago. He, you know, found a couple of hubcaps, or he saw some hubcaps that he had spotted. These are on a particularly sharp curve, he said, where, you know, a lot of people would lose their hubcaps. And, you know, the idea was, you know, going to give them back, but then, like, well, who's going to collect them? Who's going to, you know, figure out who owns what, et cetera. Decided that he's going to take them and make a suit of armor out of them, which is a cool idea, right?
It's an awesome idea.
Well, he decided to kind of abandon that idea because he decided that they had more of a, and I'll quote, he said, they have more of a marine look about them. So he decided to make a fish sculptor out of these things. Mm-hmm. And he gave it to his first sculptors, to his family as gifts. And then pretty soon, everybody started getting word about these things. They said, hey, where'd you get that cool fish sculpture? And they said, "Oh, that's a hubcap design that, you know,
my son or my relative made. Yeah.
And they said, "Wow, you know what? I would pay for something like that and see if he'll create a work for me." Well, he, you know, just working on his own, he decided that, you know, this is something I'm kind of enjoying. I'm going to keep doing this. He welds, of course, and a great sculptor, apparently. When you look at his work, you can really see that. But he created some fantastic designs, Ben, and there's one that's particularly striking.
The dragon.
The dragon.
I'm huge. Super excited about
this. Yeah, well, go ahead.
It's like 10 feet tall. It's huge.
It's 10 meters tall.
10 meters, excuse 10 me, meters. Which means it's even taller.
Yeah, it's huge.
How
it's,
many hubcaps did it take?
I don't know. You know, I think it's 200 hubcaps.
Okay.
To create this thing. But, you know, when you first hear about it, you may say, like, well, okay, he glued a bunch of hubcaps together and they look kind of like a dragon.
Yeah, well, right. Who's this guy?
Oh, no. Take a look at this thing online. You know, search for hubcap dragon, and I guarantee you'll be impressed with what this guy's created out of just hubcaps.
And you really have to see it. I don't know if it's something that we could do service to just by talking about it.
No, I don't think so. And, you know, that's not even his only big design, really. He's done – oh, Ben, did you see the shark?
I did.
He's got a website, you know, where there's well, at least other people have posted images of his work, and there's everything from, you know, an aardvark to other fish to the shark, which is really, really cool looking. The dragon, of course, is depicted there. It's just he's very, very talented at doing this. I mean, I think he's found his niche.
And he arrived at this medium independent of Ken or the other artists we'll be talking about.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So, you know, it's kind of his own thing. And looking at this, I mean, it's so cool. I mean, there's an owl I'm looking at here, and he uses, you know, he implements, you know, some of the logos too. Like the owl has the BMW crest for the eyes.
Oh yeah, I remember that
one. You know, there's a little bit of color mixed in with these things, and it's old hubcaps, new hubcaps. But from what I hear, he does prefer to work with older hubcaps that are about 20 years old, which we had just mentioned from back in the like 80s and earlier, because they seem to bend better. They don't snap like some of the newer ones do if they're made of thinner metal.
Sure.
And of course, you know, plastic is not his favorite thing to work with. Obviously, it's a metal. Sculpture. So, boy, I'm looking at some more images here. He's got a wild boar. There's a coyote, and every one of them, very, very, very. I don't know, exacting. I guess they look like they're supposed to look. I mean, fish looks like
well
a fish. Yeah, very, very well done.
It's not abstract.
No, it's cool. It's cool yard art. I think, or garage art even.
I would prefer one of these to a yard gnome.
You know what? I definitely would.
If it was between a yard gnome made of hubcaps and one of his sculptures, I may have some hesitation, but regular gnome, no contest. So let's talk about maybe some of the other folks.
Yeah, you know, I think just to kind of wrap this up, and I want to do this kind of quick because there's some people out there that have an association with hubcaps that you can't neglect.
Right. We would be doing everyone a disservice if we didn't mention these folks.
Maybe not artwork, but, you know, some of them, there's some, I don't know, some poignant lines uttered by these people that I think that makes sense. And you know what? I'm going to just mention a couple of them right now quickly here. But one of these people, her name is Jane Withers, and we're going to talk about her in a moment. So we'll get back to her. But the thing that she says about hubcaps is that hubcaps alone themselves can be works of art. You don't have to necessarily cut them up or paint them or do anything with them. Some of these things, if you look far back in history and you look back at, you know, some of these unique designs that they come up with, not the plastic ones, but we're talking about the ones that are like 20 years old or maybe older.
Or even some of the custom coach builders.
Yeah, exactly. Much, much older. You know, just at the dawn of metal wheels, really. Some of these have really intricate carvings. They have wreaths. They have crests. They have coat of arms. They have a lot of color to them.
Yeah, it's heraldry. Really.
If you polish these up and make and get them in, you know, decent enough condition, I really think you could hang these on the wall, and they are almost, some of them almost, Ben, I'll go out on a limb and say personally that I think some of them are museum worthy. I think that some of them could be in a museum, just based on the level of detail, and there's some of them are beautiful. I don't know how else to put it, really. I mean, it's something that you just have to see to understand, because you know, the newer ones, they're as far as hubcaps go, relatively plain. I know there's a lot of different wheel designs, but we're talking about hubcaps.
Right.
And hubcaps...
Utilitarian.
They're not what they used to be, Ben.
Yeah. They're much more of a fucking...
I know, it sounds like an old guy.
Get out of my yard.
No, really, like, look back in history and you'll find some just ornate, beautiful hubcaps that I think are standalone pieces.
But Withers is not the first person we're talking about.
No, no. In fact, you know, she's just one of the characters here because there's a few characters, I'll tell you. I looked at an article that was called 18 Bizarre Self-Proclaimed Capitals of the World. And I don't know why I found this, you know, while I was doing this, but I guess keyword came up. But Pearsonville, California came up as hubcap capital of the world. And they're self-proclaimed hubcap capital of the world. And the queen of the hubcaps is a lady by the name of Lucy Pearson. And now the town itself only has a population of 17.
Okay.
So it's a very, very small town. I got some news to report to you on this later.
Oh, cool. Okay.
But at the time, you know, when this was kind of in its heyday, there were about 4,000 cars on this, what they called a wrecking field. It's basically a junkyard.
Okay.
And there were about 4,000 cars on three different lots, and some of these lots had, you know, different eras that they specialized in. So like 50s until the... Like from the 1950s up until the 1980s, and then the others were like 80s up until 2001, and then the more modern vehicles were on another lot. Well, 4,000 cars, that's an awful lot of cars, and an awful lot of hubcaps, and a lot of chances to have some of these spectacular examples. Well, this lady, Lucy Pearson, she started collecting them and kind of cataloging them in her mind, really, and if you needed a hubcap, she would be able to find pretty much whatever you wanted.
Huh.
And
okay.
So this became a great source for collectors, people trying to get that last piece last piece for their restoration project. So she really became the self-proclaimed queen of hubcaps in many ways, and she's an older woman.
Uh-huh.
And I've got some news here that you know the Pearsonville yard has actually been shut down.
Oh no!
Because there was an artist, a photographer that had been traveling. And found this, you know, found that this is a great site to go and shoot still photography.
I imagine so.
Mostly at night. He shot a lot at night. He spent, I think, like 30 nights in the Pearsonville lot shooting some of these just outrageous scenes, you know, these beautiful cars. He said that he had stumbled across what he thought was like, what do you call it, ultra-rare Detroit iron is what he called it.
Okay.
It was like an elephant's graveyard is what he called it, I believe.
Oh, good.
So it was a good way to say it, I think, but... In 2008, there were about 1,000 cars left because they had already reduced the size of this lot. They had crushed a lot of them. Well, even in 2011, even hundreds more had been crushed and recycled. And I think there's a tiny little collection now that's kind of off to the side behind a big tall fence, and that's about it. So this 4,000 you know vehicle lot is now pretty much gone.
Wow.
So, but there's still. You know, if you go to Lost America, you can find and search for Pearsonville, hubcap capital of the world. You'll find this short story about it, and you'll see a lot of these images that this guy shot in his 29 nights in that yard. And some of them are just gorgeous images, but really,
and
really
he was allowed in the yard. He wasn't trespassing, right?
I don't know. Beats me. I mean, he in the article here, he calls himself Ben a serial trespasser.
Oh, okay.
So
I guess
know.
He answered
and,
that.
You know, I think that, you know, I'm sure that during the day, I wouldn't think that they would have a problem with him going in there. He wanted the nighttime images. And I don't know what this guy's story is really, but interesting. I mean, it's worth taking a look. And
Nancy Utley.
Yeah. Now we've got a Hubcap Annie's franchise right here in Marietta, Georgia.
We do. I was looking at this literally 4 minutes before we went to air. Mm-hmm. And then I thought, what is Hubcap Annie's? I don't have time to look at it.
You know, I thought for sure, I was thinking like, well, that's strange. Hubcap Annie is right here from Marietta, Georgia.
Yeah.
That's how peculiar, right?
Yeah, how serendipitous.
Not the case.
Oh.
Hubcap Annie's is actually a franchise. And I believe there's, well, at one time, and this is kind of conflicting here because there's a lot of information about Hubcap Annie's. It goes back to about 1983, 1980, somewhere in there. Hubcap Annie's real name is Nancy Utley. And Nancy Utley is the one who actually started the Hubcap Annie franchise. Her husband, who was a patrolman, started bringing home hubcaps that he found while he was on duty. And I said, I don't know why he would do that, but he brought them home. She had some other gig going, a real estate thing. She was like a housewife with kids and doing other things. And then decided that, you know what, maybe we could make a go of this. Maybe we could make something work because people They had a yard sale one day, I think is the story. And they were selling everything but not the hubcaps. And people kind of noticed the hubcaps and said, hey, how much for this hubcap? I need that for my vehicle. Mm-hmm. And she said, well, that's not really for sale. And then several other people asked about it. And she said, wait a minute, maybe there's something to this. Let's start collecting hubcaps and then we can make our business out of it. So she did. And, you know, long story short, she got this franchise situation going, started something like 40 or more franchises. It's like a $6 million a year industry. It's huge.
Wow.
So it's really paid off. And this is a while back. I think a lot of them have recently closed down, unfortunately. But I don't know how much that has to do with the new – like a lot of cars have wheels now instead of having hubcaps.
Sure, yeah.
Probably has something to do with it. But, again, this is one of those places where, you know, you'll have one in your local town, Hubcap Annie's, and that's part of this bigger franchise system.
Weird. Okay.
Yeah, so Nancy Utley is really Hubcap Annie.
And now on to what we've been foreshadowing the entire time.
Yeah, well, it's not so dramatic. I mean, there's a story in Car and Driver, and I welcome you to go and look at this, but this is kind of a strange story. About Jane Withers, who I just mentioned before. She's from Denver, Colorado. And she is was a Hubcap Annie franchise owner, and she was closing down.
Okay.
Well, Car and Driver did a story about her life and closing down this Hubcap Annie franchise in, I guess it was in a dangerous part of Denver, East Colfax Avenue, which was at one time called the longest, wickedest street in America.
Whoa.
So dangerous part of town that she's operating in. And, you know, this is a pretty good story, actually, because, you know, it tells how she basically started the business with nothing. You know, it's one of those stories, a great American story, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Rented a U-Haul, had about 600 what she called starter hubcaps, and the car broke down on the way into Denver, you know, et cetera, et cetera.
Oh, wow.
You know, arrived penniless but still began the business and, you know, several times came close, employees stealing from her, that type of thing. She had, and it's right here in the story too, but she had, you know, an addiction to diet pills, amphetamines. She had a husband that tried to kill her with a shotgun.
Whoa.
She's had a lot of ups and downs, this lady. She was in what she called the nut house for 5 years. Again, this character is fascinating, really. That's the only reason I even bring this up.
Okay.
But she, at this point, you know, had a lot of regular customers, a lot of people that would come to her because they knew that she could, you know, provide them with what they needed, the hubcaps that they needed. She was shutting down, and this was a big deal to this area.
Mm-hmm.
So again, farewell to hubcaps. It's a Car and Driver story from around 2008, but it's definitely worth, you know, 10 minutes to read.
And at this point, we are going to go ahead and disclose to everyone that we would really like to see any artwork that you have made, listeners, and it doesn't necessarily have to be a hubcap,
mm-mm,
you know, but extra points, extra arbitrary car stuff points.
Automotive parts, like if you take, let's say that you take spark plugs and you make, small animal, like desktop animals out of them or something
super
like that.
Super cool, yeah.
Yeah, something like that, or automotive springs and you do something with those.
Mm-hmm.
Something automotive related. If you do artwork of this type, you know, like of the, what is it, reduce, reuse, recycle, I'm back to the 3 R's.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you do something like this, let us know and show us it. We'd love to see it.
Maybe like a spider out of windshield wipers?
Oh, no spiders, please.
I'm sorry.
No spiders.
I think it's a little much for us to ask them to do requests, but we do have some listener mail.
Love to hear it.
All right. Derek from San Jose, California writes in to say, Dear Scott and Ben, I just listened to the When Cars Come Back episode, and as you guys predicted, you missed some cars. I've categorized them, included some info on them. My pick for a comeback car from a company that I would like to see a podcast on is the Czechoslovakian-built Tatra T87.
Hmm.
Yeah. And so here's his list. I want to see if any of our other listeners...
Wait. Tatra T87. I hope he included a photo.
I don't have a photo now.
Okay, I will have to. I'll have to search this out immediately because I just can't picture what that looks like.
We are on the case, Derek. So I'm just going to run through his list real quick. He said the modern Ford GT40 and the Ford GT.
Oh, yeah.
Ford
Great
Thunderbird.
Example.
Chevy Impala SS. Mercury Marauder, Mercedes-Benz SLS, AMG, Porsche 918 Spyder, Toyota FJ Cruiser, Peel P50, and Peel Trident.
Oh, wait a minute.
I knew you. This was you were going to
stop
on
okay.
this.
Yeah, okay. The Peel cars. Yeah, that's something else. Those are interesting. Remember the Trident is one that looks like a
little
bubblegum machine.
Yeah, yeah.
Really. That's what it looks like. Yeah.
Yeah, and he mentions that too. Okay, and he says the world's smallest production car's bubble top sibling have gotten another official production run. And then he said cars that almost came back. This list is thorough. I'm skipping around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he said he categorized it.
He did. He did a great job. So he says cars that almost came back. Lancia Stratos, a German millionaire, commissioned a modern take on the legendary rally car.
Oh, that would be so cool.
Based on a shortened Ferrari F430 chassis.
Yeah, very nice.
And then they said – he also said cars that never left – not in the U.S., but a second-generation VW microbus has seen continuous production in Brazil. It's now available in limited amounts in Europe. You know what I love about the VW microbus? This is so dumb. So there's this country song by this guy named C.W. McCall called Convoy.
Oh, that's cool. I love that. I used to sing along with that when I was a really small kid in the car. Knew every word.
So in the sequel – I think they appear in the first song because there are two. There's a sequel to Convoy. Yeah. And I love how I think he calls them 11 long-haired friends of Jesus in a chartreuse microbus.
Correct, yes.
Oh, man, I love it. He gave us a great look at some of these cars that we had missed a little bit. And six new Model Ts were also made, but were not available to the public.
Six new Model Ts.
Made in 2003.
Interesting. I had no idea.
Yeah. And he found out about this when he visited the Henry Ford Museum in Greenfield Village. So we don't, unfortunately, have enough time to read the entirety of the email, but I want to give a big thank you to Derek because that's a pretty cool list, and you made us think of Convoy, which always brightens our day just a little bit.
Pigpen this year is a rubber duck.
I'm about to put the hammer down.
That's
I'm
right.
sorry.
Yeah,
I'm so excited. I'm talking.
Going to pay no toll.
I can see our producer shaking his head.
Yeah.
So we're going to go ahead and get out of here, you guys. As always, thanks for listening. We want to give you a little something different. We like mail so much that we're actually going to give you our physical mail address. Now, for you youngins in the crowd, this harkens back to the times when people used physical things like envelopes, no hubcaps, please, to send in the mail.
Pen and paper.
Not the iPhone app, an actual pen and actual paper. And so here's our address, 3350 Peachtree Road, Suite 1500, Atlanta, Georgia, 30326. Now, that you don't have to mail us that way. We're just putting it out there. You can always find us on Facebook. You can always give us a line on Twitter. And if you want to just talk to us directly, you can send us an email
at carstuff@discovery.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@howstuffworks.com.